This is Art in Focus, brought to you by the McMullen Museum of Art at Boston College. My name is Nisha Momin, class of 2021 and a McMullen Student Ambassador. I'd like to welcome you in listening to our final installation of four episodes on the Indian Ocean Current Six Artistic Narratives exhibition. In this episode, I interview the curator of the exhibit and history professor here at BC, Prasannan Parthasarathi. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Thank you for joining me again for this podcast. I think having you here just to wrap up the Indian Ocean Current exhibits will be a great way to end in the semester. So can you just start by introducing yourself and your background in history here at Boston College?
Sure. Nisha, it's really a pleasure to do this interview with you. And nice to see you again after last semester. Nisha was in my introduction to modern South Asia last spring. So nice to reconnect. I'm a professor of modern South Asian history at BC. I've been at BC since 1998. And I teach a variety of courses on modern South Asia, so the modern Indian subcontinent. I also have taught courses in global history, and now I'm teaching a lot in environmental history because that's one of my new interests and focuses of research and thinking.
Okay, and what are some classes that you teach here at BC?
Well, I regularly teach the class that you took, Introduction to Modern South Asia, which is a survey of the Indian subcontinent from Mughal time, so about 1600, to somewhere near the present. This semester, I'm teaching a course called Planet in Peril. It's a complex problem, co-taught with Professor Juliet Shore in sociology, which is about our planetary environmental crisis. It's a combination of environmental history and also looking at the present. And I'm teaching a new course next semester, a senior colloquium for history majors called Hungry Planet, which is a history of food. So these are some of the courses I've been teaching lately. And I do some graduate teaching as well.
So you curated the current exhibit, so Indian Ocean Current's Six Narratives. How did you get involved with art, and you know, where did your interest in art stem from? And then, you know, how did you get involved with the McMullen here at BC?
Well, you know, I'm not a specialist in art or an art historian by any stretch of the imagination. And I use art, images of paintings and buildings and sculptures and so on, and also textiles in my teaching. But it's more as to illustrate something about the past rather than to really grapple with the painting or the building as a piece of art on its own terms. And of course, I mean, for growing up as a kid and as an adult, I go to museums and things, but it's always as a kind of amateur. But in the summer of 2016, my wife and I went to Mauritius, which is an island in the Indian Ocean. We were in India, in South India, in Chennai, and we went to Mauritius partly to visit my college roommate who's from Mauritius and lives there. And also I wanted to look at some archival materials in Mauritius because a lot of South Indians migrated to Mauritius in the 19th century. And I was interested in, I have a project planned on trying to understand why these migrants left South India. So I wanted to look at the materials in the Mauritian archives. So I did that. And while I was there, my college roommate's younger brother, who was also in college with us, he was 2 years behind us, named Salim Karimji, he gave us a tour of something that he had recently started, which was this Institute for Contemporary Art Indian Ocean. And he's an artist and architect, and he'd been collecting art, for contemporary art from the Indian Ocean world ever since college. So he started this foundation with a gallery space, and he showed me the space, he showed me the work he'd been doing, he showed me his collection, some of his collection of art, and I said, wow, and I was so amazed by what Salim had done. And I said, Salim, we should do something to bring this to a broader world. As a historian, I had taught about the Indian Ocean. I'd written about the Indian Ocean. I was thinking about this research project on migration in the Indian Ocean. And then to see this kind of contemporary dimension of the Indian Ocean, which I had never really engaged with, really fascinated me. And I said, I came back, I got in touch with Nancy Netzer, the director of the McMullen. And I said, Nancy, we should do a show on the Indian Ocean. And she loved the idea. And that's how it was hatched. So never having any real connection to the art world, to kind of art on its own terms. But now I was pairing up with Salim, who had that. Salim is, he's become quite well known in the world of especially African art. Mauritius is part of Africa. He's on the Tate Modern, which is a museum in London, their committee on African art and so on. So it was a fortuitous kind of connection and a fortuitous partnership, Salim and I.
So this vision for the ocean currents and the focus on climate change, can you tell me a little bit about why you decided to focus on that and just how you kind of crafted the narrative for the whole exhibit?
Well, as Salim and I talked and kind of developing some of the ideas, the themes and the concepts behind the show, I said to him, look, Salim, whatever we do on oceans, we need to include a climate change component. And the oceans absorbed a huge amount of the global warming that's taken place in the last several decades. And the Indian Ocean has warmed the most dramatically of all the world's oceans. So you have a disproportionate amount of heat has been taken up by the Indian Ocean, and oceanographers still don't understand why. And I said, and this is going to have huge implications for the inhabitants of the whole Indian Ocean region, but especially those in the Indian subcontinent, because the rainfall of the monsoon is going to be affected and changed. So more than 1 billion people are going to be affected by any changes in the Indian Ocean climate system. So Salim was totally with that. He lives on the beach in Mauritius and has been seeing, Mauritius has already experienced all kinds of weird cyclones or hurricanes, as are known as cyclones in the Indian Ocean world, because of climate change. So he was totally on board with that. And I felt like to include it would also be an opportunity to educate students and faculty and staff at BC, as well as members of the community who would come to the show on the important ramifications of climate change. So my feeling is whatever we do these days, I feel like I need to include some climate change dimension of in that work, because climate change is so critical. So that's how we got into it. And I suggested this to Nancy, and Nancy Netzer was totally excited about it. And I was a little nervous. I mean, I think partly doing this, so from the beginning, when we had conversations about the show, we included faculty members from Earth and Environmental Sciences at BC. And the main person who works on oceans in the department is Gail Kanicki. And then there was also someone else, a younger person who left BC, came to our meetings, a climate change specialist. And Gail is also a research associate at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute on the Cape. And she connected me with a couple of specialists on the Indian Ocean working at Woods Hole. So they participated and contributed materials to the show. And as a kind of neophyte, this is the first thing I've ever curated. And not being a kind of specialist in art, I just kind of bumbled along. And to me, it just seemed to make total sense to include materials from scientists alongside this, what I think is really spectacular works of art. And I was really nervous how it would be received. But when the art critic for the Boston Globe visited the show right after it opened and wrote a really positive review of the show, and part of what I think he was really kind of blown away by the inclusion of this scientific material on climate change. So I think it was just my total lack of experience that allowed me to just charge ahead on this path that I charted without really thinking about it. But it seems to have worked out.
Congratulations, first of all. I mean, I'm sure that's like a huge accomplishment and something, you know, you never think that you would do something like that, and then it just happens.
Thank you, Nisha.
You know, you mentioned briefly working with the scientists on the Cape, the researchers. I'm curious how you kind of got in contact with the artists and picked the artists that you wanted to use in their work for this exhibit.
Well, Salim, because he's been part of this art world for decades now, I mean, knows a lot of the artists in this, in the contemporary Indian Ocean world scene. And even the artists he doesn't know, he knows most of the artists and the work that they do. So the process that we settled upon is that he put together a list of a couple of dozen artists that we started with. And then Salim on Skype, because this was before the days of Zoom, you may remember Skype, which was a much inferior form of communication. we would meet in the seminar room up on the third floor of the museum with the museum staff and Salim and I, and then other faculty members. And we would kind of look at the works of different artists that he's suggested and kind of critique them. Did we like their work? Did we think it would fit the show? Would it be easy to bring to BC? Because there was also questions of the portability of pieces. And because we also had a budget for transporting pieces and things like that. And so over a number of months, we kind of gradually narrowed down the artists that we wanted. And we wanted some geographical distribution and so on, and some works that really kind of spoke to us and spoke to what we saw as the important themes of the show. So it was just a matter of looking at a lot of artwork, but with Salim as the guide, and then everyone expressing their opinions, and finally Salim and I kind of winnowing it down to 4-6 artists. We finally settled on six. We thought that was a good number given the space that we had and so on. So it was a multi-pronged process.
Gotcha. Yeah, that shipping aspect was something that I wanted to ask you about, actually. Yeah. Especially because there's the one piece by Nicholas
Lobo.
The rubber boots, that big massive sculpture. And I just saw that and I'm like, I'm not sure where he's from, but it's probably pretty far away.
He's from South Africa.
South Africa, okay. You know, so I was thinking, how did they get that here? Did they fly it out here? Did they ship it out here?
Well, we were kind of amazed when that piece arrived. But I still remember talking to Diana Larson at the museum, who is the installation person. And we were kind of thinking, how did that? Because we remembered the photographs and we were thinking, how did this fit in here into this box? And the box actually, that piece is owned by a collector in New York. So the shipping didn't have to come from South Africa. So we worked also with artists, their galleries, and they kind of told us about pieces that were from the artists that we were interested in, pieces that were in the US or Europe and so on. But the piece was it came without, just kind of flat. So Diana had to get a lot of newspaper and rags and blankets and stuff it. So when we pack it up, it will unstuff it and then it collapses and it's packed into a kind of flat box. So that's why we were totally flummoxed when we just saw the box. It was unstuffed. We didn't realize that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because, you know, I don't touch the piece, obviously. So to me, it looks like it's very solid on the inside and dense. I didn't realize it was something you actually could put stuff with things to kind of inflate it.
Yeah. So she just had to find all kinds of things that she had stored up, blankets and rags and all kinds of things to get it to puff up. And then there's that wall, the speaking wall, that Shilpa Gupta's piece. So we were worried that we would have to pay for the shipment of special bricks. But she said, no, you can just buy the bricks, buy local bricks.
Okay, so she really didn't care about the physical structure too much. It was more about getting the bricks set up in the way she wanted and then having the guide.
Yeah, well, she had very careful sketch of the space. The layout of the bricks and the distances and all of this. And she wanted lines on the floor. So all of that had to be done very precisely. But the bricks we could buy locally. We didn't have to use any bricks that she had supplied. And that piece actually came from the Netherlands, from a museum in the Netherlands.
Okay, so these pieces were really coming from, they had been in other exhibits throughout the world as well.
Yes, yes. I mean, so pieces were coming from all over the world, but a couple of pieces from New York. I mean, Wangechi Mutu's collage came from New York. That's owned by the artist, and she has a studio in Brooklyn, as and divides her time between Brooklyn and Nairobi, Kenya. But this piece was in Brooklyn. Some of the pieces that came from South Africa, Penny Siopis's paintings, those were fairly easy to ship. Warm water paintings. I mean, those paintings are really extraordinary. I mean, Penny Siopis was so taken with our kind of précis for the show and its emphasis on climate change that Penny Siopis started producing some work specifically for our show, inspired by the theme of climate change. So Warm Waters is one. So that's, we have 30 paintings from a much larger series that she did on the theme of warm waters. But it's really inspired by the rising waters that climate change is creating around the world. And then the video that she made, She Breathes Water, was also inspired by our show. So both of these she made specifically for Indian Ocean Current, for our exhibit. So it was really quite an honor to have Penny Siopis do that.
I really like those warm water paintings and just the way it's laid out. I think the little blurb that she wrote for it kind of explains that, you know, it's like, what is climate change? What is it when you think of it? Is it warm? Is it cold? And I think that really comes through in those paintings. So those ones, I think, just tie everything together so well.
Those paintings are spectacular. There's something about walking into that room and seeing the totality of the paintings that's just really powerful. And I feel that the way that the paint and the glue, so she uses the way she does her paint, those paintings, is she mixes glue and paint and just allows the glue to flow, and so that's how the paint goes beyond the borders of the paper. It's just like, so it's kind of, it really captures the inability of borders or boundaries to contain rising waters or warm waters. And coming right after Shilpa Gupta's tremendous interrogation of borders and the critique of the unnaturalness of borders, it's I think it's really powerful, the juxtaposition of Shilpa's work on borders and boundaries than with Penny Siopis's kind of border busting.
So what is one of your favorite pieces from the collection? And you don't necessarily have to pick a favorite, but maybe just one that you think is extremely special.
I really like all the pieces that we picked at the end. And they speak to me differently on different days. So some days I go in and, I mean, I love Siraj Baiju's work on based on Mauritius, because I feel like I'm in the Indian Ocean. I feel like I'm in Mauritius when I'm looking at his work in that milieu of incredible diversity of peoples and so on. Penny Siopis, I talked about. Shilpa Gupta's work, I love. It's just so smart and intelligent. Nicholas Lobo, we talked about a little bit. I mean, his work is so powerful. And the kind of the intellectual firepower of these artists is something that I hadn't really appreciated until I saw the works and really got to think about them really much more deeply. It's one thing to see the pictures and so on, but to really engage with the physical presence is really something else. And Nicholas Lobo's, the physicality of his pieces really is powerful. Hajra Wahid is so cerebral, but and at the same time, so powerful. And it's just getting at the most important process that may define our era, which is the extraction of things from the earth, most importantly, fossil fuels. And this idea that we're turning the earth inside out, as the historian Gabriela Hecht has put it. But I've saved Wangechi Mutu for last, because there are days when I would go into the gallery. And so Wangechi Mutu, the video Amazing Grace was the first piece that we identified. We saw it and we said, oh, we have to include this in the show. I mean, it was just so beautiful. And Wangechi Mutu singing Amazing Grace in Kikuyu, I mean, it just spoke to so many concerns that have shaped the Indian Ocean: slavery, water, and the importance of water as some as a life-giving force, but at the same time as a force of that has destroyed so many humans. And the way that video is presented in the gallery, where for most of the floor you can hear Wangechi Mutu singing "Amazing Grace," to me was amazing. It was stunning, and it, because it's just such a she has such a beautiful voice. So I loved that piece, and I have to say, we approached Wangechi Mutu and said, "Can we include Amazing Grace?" And she said, "Of course." And then she said, would you like to include something else by me?" And Salim and I were so excited. We said, "Yes, of course." "And do you have anything you'd suggest?" And she suggested this, the collage. I can't remember the exact title here. I have it here. I'm Too Misty. And we saw photographs of it and it looked amazing. But then there was something about seeing it in person. My heart just skipped a beat. And as I studied it more, I mean, I would go and sit, I spent many hours sitting in that room, kind of listening to Wangechi Mutu, watching Amazing Grace, staring at I'm Too Misty. And I have to say, one day I came home and I said to my wife, I have something to confess to you. And she said, "What?" I said, "I've fallen in love with another woman." And she kind of looked at me and she said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Wangechi Mutu." "I'm in love with Wangechi Mutu." And she just started laughing. So all of them have captured my heart in some way, all of the artists.
And it's great that you pointed out that you can hear Mutu singing throughout the whole exhibit, because I think that's one of the most impactful elements of the entire exhibit, is just being in that space and staring at all these different paintings, but getting to hear that like consistency throughout. And the even like the reflection of the light from the videos, the blue reflection, I think it just carries through so nicely.
And I have to say, I mean, Diana Larson, who does the installation, and she designed the space, and it's, with, Salim and I gave feedback and things, but it was really, she was the designer. She did a fantastic job.
And then I just want to finish this up by asking, you know, what do you hope that students get from visiting this exhibit?
The first thing is just the beauty, and I mean the beauty and the importance of this work, of these works of art, is really the first thing. I mean, I think just appreciating the pieces and the artists for the difficult things that they're grappling with, I think is really the first thing. But I really stand by the three themes that shaped the show: the extraordinary pluralism of this Indian Ocean world, that diverse peoples mixed and lived together for hundreds of years, thousands of years. So we can figure out solutions to live together, even within our great differences. I mean, that's one thing that the Indian Ocean shows us. I mean, the second big theme is the artificiality of borders, that borders are naturalized and made to seem like they're timeless. But in the Indian Ocean world, they're only several decades old. And just the creation of borders in the Indian Ocean world, as well as elsewhere in the world, has been accompanied by extraordinary violence. I mean, the Rohingya crisis today is really kind of the latest installment of violence, in which people are seen as not being part of a nation and therefore should be sent outside the borders. So we need to interrogate borders. And finally, I mean, the thing that cannot be contained by borders today, the most pressing issue of our time, climate change, carbon dioxide and other heat trapping gases. The climate system is global. The atmosphere is global. Climate change needs us to reject borders, and we need to grapple with it, because otherwise these worlds like the Indian Ocean and other worlds around our planet are about to be dramatically transformed and made much more inhospitable for humans, as well as other species with whom we share our planet. So these are the main messages that I hope people, students and others, get out of the show.
Yeah, I love that it's drawing this attention to this part of the world that I feel like doesn't really get a lot of attention.
Yeah, no, that's also really exciting. The part of the world we're from. I want to thank really the the staff of the McMullen Museum, Nancy Netzer, Diana Larson, Kate Schugert, and John McCoy. Kate Schugert did a lot of the behind-the-scenes work and also really helped, was pivotal in putting together the catalog for the show. And John McCoy did a lot in terms of the design and also some of the video, putting together some of the videos and so on. Enormous thanks from both Salim and I.
That concludes this episode of Art in Focus. Thank you for listening, and be sure to visit The Terrace, the McMullen Student Publications page, to find more episodes in the series. This episode was produced by Rachel Brody, the McMullen Graduate Assistant and a doctoral candidate in the History Department. It was mixed and edited by Anisha Momin, class of 2021. And thank you to Rachel Chamberlain, the McMullen Manager of Education, and Megan Minahan, class of 2022, who lent production support. And finally, to our publications committee, who uploaded these videos on The Terrace.